I want to invite you tonight to spend some time thinking about the day before the first Easter. I want you especially to think about the followers of Jesus, and particularly about Paul. I think that they all went back to their rooms on Friday night, questioning their belief in God. I don't think they slept much that night, if at all. I think there was a lot of weeping in the darkness. There's a lot of grieving. On Friday night, they wrestled with that emotion and struggled with their thoughts about God. See, in a few, just a few days, they had gone from the highest of highs, and then had everything come crashing down around them. The very foundation of what they had spent 3 years doing crumbled beneath them, and they were left to free fall that night. And all through Saturday. Things like this weren't supposed to happen to good people. Good people aren't supposed to be executed as criminals. These are some of the thoughts that are coming to them. There had never been anyone as good as him. It's not fair. It's not right. This isn't how it should have played out. He was a king, not a criminal. How could a just God let him be crucified? Where was God? They're thinking. Where's God now? Where's God now when I need God? Does God even exist? I don't know anymore. And if God exists, should I trust him? I mean, if God couldn't take care of Jesus, what would I? How do I think God cares about me? These are the thoughts on Friday night and Saturday, folks. We did everything we could. We gave up our jobs. We left our homes behind. We sold all our stuff. We gave 3 years of our lives for what? For what? Jesus gave us hope. He gave us a purpose for living. He gave us a vision for a better world. But now it's all gone. We held up our part of the bargain. Why didn't God hold up his end of it? It's Friday night and Saturday, so a lot of people saying, God, I'm so angry with you. I'm so hurting. I am so lost right now. Friday night, all day Saturday, into Saturday night. Now Peter's got his own personal hell. Peter had betrayed and denied the only one in all the universe who loved him perfectly. And he knew it. He knew what he had done. Oh, he had been so confident he was stronger than the others. All of them, oh, they might fail Jesus someday, but not him. He would stand by Jesus no matter what, well, until he didn't. Peter hadn't wept through the night. He'd sobbed uncontrollably. Those people, why couldn't they just have let them alone? They kept on asking questions. They kept prying. Their guesses coming closer and closer. One, you know. And then two. And then that third one. He cursed Jesus just to get them off his back. Why couldn't they just have left him alone? And with that third one, he glanced up. When he glanced up, he happened to see Jesus being led out of where he was onto the next place. And Jesus was looking right at him. And Peter spent that Friday night, that Saturday night, knowing that the last thing Jesus ever heard Peter say was, "I don't know him." He punctuated with a curse. There are things in life that cannot be unsaid or undone. There are not always second chances. Nothing will ever make up for whatever you said or what you've done no matter how long or how hard you try to do it. And sometimes you never even get a chance to say, I'm sorry. Because before you can do that, the person is taken out of your life. And you're stuck. You're stuck. You're stuck with your guilt. You're stuck with your shame. You will live with your regrets for the rest of your life. You will try to box them up. You'll try to hide them back in the deep recesses of your memory. But they're always going to be there. And every once in a while, when you least expect it, they're going to pop their ugly head and remind you just how messed up a person you are. Because you have things in your life that you can't unsay and you can't undo. And you're stuck. And that's where Peter was before Easter. Stuck. He's got nowhere to go. Nowhere to take his guilt, nowhere to take his shame or his regrets. If he could, he'd take it to Jesus. But Jesus is dead. He's dead. He can't take it there. It's too late to try and make things right with Jesus. And even if he could, it would never be the same again. Maybe you've been where they are, where Peter was. Or maybe it's very likely you know someone who's there right now. They're stuck. They're stuck and they don't know where to go with it. Maybe you're stuck. You don't know where to go with it. And if you don't, well, live long enough, you'll know somebody. Live long enough and you'll be that person. Somewhere along the line, you'll do something, you'll say something that you will wish for the rest of your life again and say. And if Jesus is dead, and if in your mind you're pretty sure that God doesn't give a rip about you because you screwed up so badly, what are you going to do about being stuck? What are you going to do about being stuck? If you're living in Saturday after the hell of Friday, you have no idea what's going to happen on Sunday. What do you do with the problem of being stuck? You can fight it. Oh yeah, you can fight it. You can harden yourself against all of your feelings. You can build a wall around all your hurts. You can bury that guilt, that shame, that those regrets, and you can declare them dead, but they're not, and you know it. You can go on and live life any way you want to. Because you've done that already. Yeah. One way of dealing with it is just say nothing's really wrong. What I did wasn't really wrong. And you'll find some people that'll support you on that. They'll say something like, sin is something religious people cooked up to take advantage of us. Just take care of yourself. That's all you got to do. Don't worry about anyone else. It's a tough life and only strong survive. That's one way of fighting it. It's one way of dealing with being stuck. Or you can fight it in a very different way by using it as a motivation to live a better life. I'm never going to let that happen again. You can take your life, you can set out to prove that that past event was just an anomaly. It's not who you really are. That's not really who you are. That's not the kind of person you are. You'll be ultra-moral. You'll be extra-generous. You'll be extraordinarily disciplined. You're going to earn the right to justify yourself. But you know what? That ugly little voice is still going to be there. It's still going to say, you think you're so good. Remember when. And you're still going to be stuck. Or if you can't fight it, you can give into it. Let it break you. Since you're such a terrible person, why not just lay that out? Just be the awful person you think you are. Who cares? What does it matter? So what if I destroy myself little by little or all at once? The world's better without people like me in it. You know, if my friends and my family knew everything that I've done, or the darkness of my past and my present, They wouldn't take me the way they do now. I've been hiding. I've been pretty good at hiding it. But how long can I keep that up? How long till it comes out in the open? I just don't even feel like getting up in the morning. Matter of fact, I don't feel much at all. Good thinking. Because I hate me. I hate the person I think I am. And if you're living a Saturday after Nightmare Friday, it's not too hard to get there, is it? You've had a nightmare on Fridays. Maybe that wasn't a Friday, but you've had nightmares. You've had life go crazy. And you've had to live with it the day after. And maybe you're still living with it now. And you can live stuck on Saturday, or you can live Sunday. You can remain stuck at Saturday, or you can move to Sunday. You can live based on what happened on Friday, or you can live into what happened on Easter. You can stay stuck, or you can be set free. If Jesus is dead and God doesn't care, you're always going to be stuck, either fighting it, giving into your anger, your doubts, as well as your guilt, your shame, your regrets. But Jesus is not dead, and God does care. So there is a third way. And it's not fighting it. It's not giving into it. But it's freely available to you and to everyone else. So if you're stuck, or you know somebody who's stuck, the rest of this message is for you. Because there is a way to be set free. And it's called Easter. Now, so far, I've been talking about big messes. The ones that get us stuck really badly, but those aren't the only ones, are they? In every aspect of living, we fall short of the person that we were called to be by God. The old reformers used to have a phrase for that. They called it total depravity. What does that mean? Well, it didn't mean that everything about us is as bad as it could be. It did mean that everything, even the best of what we do, is tainted and polluted in some way. It's never as pure as we were meant to have it, and as we were meant to be. The Bible tells us that when we're strutting around, showing off our very best stuff, our very best Christian side of ourselves, our very best moral side of ourselves, if we don't understand Easter, it's just a pile of crap compared to what we're created to be. That's what Paul said. Just a pile of crap. If you're just pretending to be moral, and you're pretending to be good, and you're hiding your stuff, and you're still stuck, and you're not dealing with it in a positive way, everything that you're doing to pretend to be okay, it's just a pile of crap. So, you don't even have to go as high as God's standards to understand this. I mean, some people will say, oh, God, this, God, that. God's too perfectionistic. God wants too much. I don't believe in the Bible. I'm a good person. I'm okay. Well, let me ask you this. I want you to imagine a story for a moment. I want you to imagine that when you were born, there was an invisible microphone, a little microchip, that all your life is going to record everything you ever say about how people ought to live and trust each other. And then when you die, God takes that microchip from you, sticks it in his divine computer, and pushes the play button. And that microchip is everything you've ever said about how other people ought to live, how other people ought to treat you. Every criticism you've ever had about how somebody else had messed up. And if you have to listen to that tape, you're going to be convicted by your own words. God doesn't have to use his holy law. He can just use your awareness that you live by a double standard. We all do. We all do. And if Jesus is dead and God doesn't care, you're still stuck. And even if God does exist, but Jesus is still dead, you're still stuck. Unless Sunday happens. Unless Sunday happens. What happens that Sunday? Jesus rises from the dead, right? Good for him. Great news for him. He's no longer dead. Wow, that'd be great. Lucky guy. He's alive. So what? Good news for him, but why is it good news for the whole world? Why is it this probably the single most important moment in human history? And why, once you understand it, can you not remain neutral but either of us embrace it or reject it and walk away? I'm going to suggest there's three reasons. There's more, but I'm going to give you three reasons. The satisfaction of justice, the release of mercy, and freedom from being stuck. That's what the resurrection tells us. What do I mean by that? Some of you and some of the people you know may wonder why Easter was even necessary. Why did Jesus need to suffer or so, go through this excruciating execution and die? I mean, if God's an all-powerful and loving God, couldn't God have just issued and declared a universal forgiveness of sin and skipped all this pain and all this blood? I mean, why do we have to go through this thing? Why did Jesus have to go through this thing? Can't God just say, it's okay, you're all forgiven? But a just God couldn't do that and still be loving God. Why? Because a universal amnesty for perpetrators would be a gross injustice to victims. And that's something a loving God could never tolerate. That an injustice would just be ignored. There needs to be a cost paid for injustice, for sin. There's a consequence and a price to pay for every sin. Either the perpetrator pays it or the victim pays it. If you break something in a store, either you pay for it or the owner of the store pays for it. Right? So that's why we have this kind of rule, at least we used in my day, I think you still do. You break it, you pay for it. If you get a parking ticket, until you pay that parking ticket, you are under condemnation. You've broken the law. Once you pay for that ticket, you're no longer under condemnation. It's paid for. That's justice. That's fair. But tell me this. What is the price we owe to God for defacing God's image that he put upon us in our creation? What do we owe God for vandalizing ourselves? Defacing ourselves. Putting graffiti all over us. Breaking the windows. Letting the whole place run down. What's the consequence for distorting and polluting a perfect creation? And how much does it cost to make up for that? Because that's what God gave us, and we ruined it. And what's the cost for shattering relationships that were seamlessly bonded in God's design? Things like family and marriage and community and friendship. We break them all the time. And how do you make up for betraying the only entity in all the universe who loves you perfectly and absolutely? You know, a lot of people think that you go against God by breaking God's rules. Now, there's some truth to that, but it's deeper than that. You go against God every time you break God's heart. It's personal. It's not legal. It's relational. It's not rules. And how do you heal God's heart? You can't. I can't. We can't heal God's heart. There are things that are said and things that we've done that just can't be undone. Humanity can't satisfy justice and therefore stands condemned. There's only one entity in all the universe that can pay the price for our sins and get us out of condemnation. The only entity that has the ability to do that is God. But here's the problem. God's the victim. We messed up God's stuff. We betrayed God's relationship. God's the victim. I don't know about you, but I'm not big into paying stuff for people that perpetrate things on me. I personally feel like they all pay for it. I'm glad that's the way God works. The victim pays the price of forgiveness. The victim sacrifices everything in order to restore the relationship and bail out the perpetrators and make things right. That's exactly what God does in the person of Jesus Christ on the cross. And the resurrection proves that he did it. Because if he died for our condemnation and then he lives, that means that somewhere between there, everything was paid. And there is no longer any condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. It's all been paid. It's all been paid. All that stuff that you're stuck about, all that guilt, all that shame, all that anger, all that disappointment, it's been paid. You're as free now as you were when you paid the parking ticket and walked away and said, you got no hold on me, law. Devil, you got no hold on me now. It's all been paid. Justice has been satisfied. That is grace. That's God loving the undeserving, which is us, you and me. That's grace. And once justice is satisfied, it opens up the way for the mercy of God to reconcile, renew, and restore all of humanity. You and me, sinners saved by grace. God is the ultimate authority who's always going to enforce justice. There's always going to be a price for sin, and God's going to be enforcing it. But God has never, ever been our adversary. He's never out to get us. God's law, God is not the image that some people have of some power up there sitting around just waiting for you to screw up so he can zap you. God's never been that kind of God. God has always been faithful to us, even if we've been faithless to God. Always. Always. God has given us open arms to take us home. Come on home. Come on home. Come on home. I don't care how far away from home you've gone. Come on home. My arms are open to receive you. And those nail-pierced hands say, everything's been paid. Will you trust me now? Will you let me get you unstuck? Will you trust and believe in me? Will you take the new life I have to offer? Here's my question. Have you taken it? Are you thinking about taking it? Have you ever really thought it through? God's waiting for you. Will you take it? But you know what? You can't take God's hands if your hands are still full of your baggage. If it's all full of stuff that has you stuck, you can't take God's hands because you don't know you're hanging on to something else, right? And all that baggage, the baggage of disappointment with God, the anger at God that we sometimes have, the distrust of God, our baggage of our own self-incrimination, of our guilt, our shame, of regrets and hopelessness, the baggage of how we've dealt with those things, our hardening, our self-righteousness, the despair, our self-destructiveness. As long as your hands are full of those things, you can't take God's hands. If you want to hang on to all that stuff and say, this is my problem to deal with, and once I deal with it, God, then I'll take your hands, you're always going to be stuck.
you're always going to be stuck.
Because you're never going to be able to deal with it. But I want you to remember this. That hand that is held out to you will take that baggage off your hands. That's what Friday was about, folks. When Jesus is up on that cross, he's taking all your stuckness, all your baggage, he's taking it off your hands. See, Friday is about getting rid of baggage. The resurrection isn't about your baggage. It's about you. You know, we say, I'm so happy that Jesus took my sins away. And he did. But if you stop there, you never got to Easter. That was Friday. This is Sunday. It's more than just getting forgiveness. It's more than just giving the baggage. It's more than just having somebody deal with your shame, your guilt, and your frustrations, and your disappointments in life. It is that, but it's much more. The resurrection is for you. The resurrection happens because Jesus wants you. Not just a part of you. All of you. Every bit of your life. Jesus wants to be there and be in with you. Every bit of your life. That's what resurrection is all about. Jesus did not die to keep taking your baggage so you can go on living however you want. If that's how you see what Christ did for you, is that I finally have a place I can go, and I used to feel guilty about doing these things, but now Jesus is going to forgive me, so it doesn't matter. Then you don't understand Easter. That's Friday. Easter is about you. Not your baggage. He wants you, and he wants every bit of you. He died because he loves you too much to leave you as you are right now. Oh, he loves you as you are, or else he wouldn't have died for you. But he loves you too much to just leave you where you are, just take off your baggage and say, go ahead and try it again. Because you're just going to mess up again. If you keep in the same pattern. No, a resurrection wants you. He wants every bit about you. Because he loves you. He wants to be with you. The hand that is extended to you on Easter morning is the hand that's going to lead you into a new way of living. It's the hand that's ready to lead you into what you were created to be. It's a hand that's going to set you free and then take you home. And on the journey till you get home, you're going to be living as much like Jesus and telling as many people about Jesus as you can. Because that's what Easter's about. It's not just getting rid of your sins, it's getting a new life. Until you understand that getting a new life is part of the deal, you don't understand Easter. So here's my question. There's a nail-pierced hand that's reaching out to you. Are you willing to trust that hand enough to drop all that baggage? And take it. And say, I don't know what this means entirely. I'm not sure it's going to take me. But yes, I want a new life. I want to be yours. I want to be you as much like you as I can. Lord, take my hand and help me because I can't do it myself. Then you understand Easter.